Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, we got a mailbag edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. Great questions coming up for you. Of course, the Bucs are down in Miami practicing at the Dolphins facility, preparing for their game this weekend. Sunday night still scheduled. We'll have to see where that game ultimately is played, hopefully at Raymond James Stadium. But they are in South Florida, of course, getting ready for that one. A little bit of news because of the sort of uncertainty with that situation. Bruce Arians was going into the Ring of Honor at halftime of this game. They're going to postpone that or delay it, I guess, to another date, another home date down the road. So if you're looking forward to seeing Bruce Arians' name hung in the Ring of Honor, even if they do play the game at Raymond James, that won't be the case this weekend. It'll be another home game in the future. So just keep that in mind. Hey, wanted to also remind you guys, if you want to save money on your electric bill, we have a way to do it. It's May Electric Solar. They're a family-owned and operated business. They've been installing solar electric systems for 12 years. Now, there's a lot of these companies out there, but May Electric Solar is committed to you for the long term. They guarantee their workmanship with a 30-year labor and service warranty. Plus, with every installation, you get $750 worth of surge protection for all your appliances. That is the May difference. If you visit their Hudson showroom, May Electric displays all its products. They conduct on-site testing. You can see exactly what they're installing. Plus, they don't use subcontractors, so you know who is doing the job. Start saving today. Call the solar energy experts, May Electric Solar, at 727-819-2862. You can schedule a free estimate. You can lower your electric bill all year long and preserve the quality of your life and preserve your appliances as well. That's May Electric Solar, 727-819-2862.
Rick, we have a couple more Hurricane Ian weather-related stuff. And just so everyone knows, we're taping this Tuesday afternoon. Yep. Of course, the storm surges and winds and all that will kick up probably later this evening. As your time you're hearing this, we'll be feeling it in the Tampa Bay area. But USF's game on Saturday is not going to be played at Raymond James Stadium. They're playing ECU down at Boca Raton at FAU. And that game's been moved up to 2:30 on Saturday on ESPN+. And then the Lightning have moved their training camp essentially to Nashville at this point. Tuesday night they played a game in Raleigh. The rest of the team is now in Nashville. They're going to make up one of the games that was canceled for Wednesday, Thursday. They're going to play that in Nashville Thursday night at 8 o'clock Eastern. And then they have a 6 o'clock Eastern game on Friday against Nashville in Nashville. So both those games, instead of a home and home, both of them are going to be in Nashville now this week. So,
yeah. Well, a lot of the, you know, you think about professional sports, and I was chatting with Brian Ford the other day, who's the COO of the Bucks, and I was like, you know, it's emotional if you haven't been through this, and Tom Brady talked about it on his Let's Go podcast. Like, you really have a different sense of urgency when that, you know, hurricane is sort of pointed in your direction. But in case of these athletes who are already, you know, have tough jobs and they got to prepare for games and play games during the week and stuff like that, they're leaving their families, in some cases their kids, their wives. The Buccaneers, I think, at least have given the families an opportunity to join them in Miami or in South Florida. Of course, the facility is actually in Davie, Florida. But so, yeah, if you know, they had kids or they had wives or whatever that wanted to get out of harm's way and not have to be worried about them back in the Tampa Bay area, they were able to go with them to Miami. But look, it's a tough week to prepare, right? Because our thoughts are not necessarily first and foremost on playing games, and yet this is their job, this is what they do, and there will be a game played somewhere on Sunday, and so, you know, they got to get ready, but they've also got lives too. So a lot of things going on right now with the hurricane preparation for Ian.
All right, we'll get to the mailbag here, and we'll start with Tech One, who emailed or tweeted, with tickets to Sunday's game and also traveling from out of town, when could we expect guidance from the NFL if the game would be in Tampa versus another venue and whether it might be Sunday or Monday? Thank you.
Well, I would think that we would know something probably by Friday. I think this thing has to sort of make landfall, and that could be anywhere from, you know, late Wednesday, early Thursday, I guess, sometime. I mean, you just don't know. These things get out in the Gulf, and they can stall. I think the last time I checked, it was moving about 15 miles an hour or so. So, I mean, all that just depends on the storm. And, you know, if it gets to a point where they feel like it's going to be a major storm, catastrophic type results somewhere on the west coast of Florida that's near Tampa, they may decide, look, emergency services are going to be needed, you know, to that area that's not that far from the Tampa Bay region, and therefore maybe you wouldn't have enough to spare to put on a National Football League game on Sunday night here at Raymond James. So they're monitoring all those things. There's been reports on the NFL Network and others that, you know, for that same reason, they probably wouldn't play the game down at Hard Rock in Miami, because even if Miami's not involved in a direct hit, which it doesn't appear they will be, their services may be needed elsewhere, and they may lend a hand to that area where it does come ashore. And so, you know, optically, that might not be the best thing either. So I've heard places as far away as Minneapolis, because the Vikings are in London to play the New Orleans Saints. And you would say, well, why not New Orleans? Well, there's a lot of reasons why not New Orleans, but not the least of which, it may not be much of a home field advantage if you invite Saints fans to root for Kansas City. But we'll know if we don't already by the time you hear this podcast, and we are taping this, on Tuesday afternoon. But look, I can appreciate people that have folks coming in, or they have tickets, and there's really nothing you can say except, you know, this thing is unpredictable and they're going to need a few days to figure it out. But they're making contingencies. And right now, at least before the storm hits, the plan is to play Sunday night at Raymond James. And we haven't heard anything to the different.
All right. Tommy had tweeted us. He says, if the NFL has to move the Bucs-Chiefs game on Sunday night, how much of a big revenue hit is it for the Bucs because they can't host the game at Raymond James Stadium?
Well, it's significant. I mean, the TV money, as we've always said, is you know, sort of the biggest revenue boost for any franchise. But, you're talking about where they have a record crowd, nearly 70,000 that were in the house for the Green Bay Packers game. I would imagine, I know all these games are sold out. They added, you know, those seats in the south, or I guess it's the north end zone, opposite the pirate ship to increase attendance. So, look, with parking, with concessions, I don't know what the total revenue is per game, mm-hmm. But you would think it would be pretty significant. And how they make that up, well, there'll be some ticket sales if they do go someplace else. They'll get those. And then beyond that, I don't really know, to be honest with you.
Well, there's also an expense hit. I mean, they're paying for hotels in Miami for all these players.
That's correct. That's correct. Now, some businesses, and the Bucs have done this in the past, they did it with Irma. They applied and I think received money from the federal government for hurricane relief because it affected their business. And this would be one of those cases, right, where you had an event plan that got postponed or canceled and you lost a lot of revenue. So I think they were successful in getting some of that revenue back. The Miami Dolphins were supposed to open the season here, and they didn't. They wound up playing that game in November because they both had the same bye week. So they had the same allotment of home games. This would not be the case if this game was moved. And they've already got one game in London already prepared too. So, yeah, I think they would probably have a claim of some kind. But, listen, I think there's more concerning things to the Glazers right now. They want to play the game here for their fans. They'd like to play it here for their football team to give them the best opportunity to win, and more importantly, if they can play, it means that this area has been spared the biggest brunt of the hurricane, and that would be a good thing for the Tampa Bay region. Wherever it comes ashore, it's going to be a bad thing for them, but certainly they're still hopeful, and the league is still hopeful as well. They haven't made a decision, at least as we do this podcast on Tuesday afternoon.
All right, Ellis tweeted us. He says, it is unfortunate, but how much does Donovan Smith's absence highlight how truly valuable he is?
Well, I've been saying it for a long time. I know that there's been sort of almost most of his career, especially early in his career, this idea that he was a lesser left tackle than, say, Ali Marpet was a guard, or Ryan Jensen was a center, or, you know, Alex Kappa, or, you know, I mean, you can go right down the list of good offensive linemen that he's played, and many of those guys, including Tristan Wirfs, made Pro Bowls, right? And Donovan has not. But you know what? I think he's played at a Pro Bowl level at times, and particularly he did that during the 2020 season when they won the Super Bowl. It's hard in this league to find, first of all, a guy at left tackle that you can count on. The biggest thing you can say about Donovan until this season is his durability was his calling card. He did not miss games. Hell, he didn't miss snaps. I mean, this guy has been a starter from the day that he walked into the building out of Penn State. So I think at the end of the day, you know, when you consider all the great edge rushers in the NFC, in the AFC that he has faced over these years, he has more than held his own. And I thought even after Tom Brady got here that Donovan Smith took it to another level. And that's expected, right? Because not that you don't block hard for Jameis Winston or whoever's at quarterback, but you know what's at stake. You know you have an iconic guy that can get you to the promised land and did. And, you know, if that doesn't motivate you to win a Super Bowl, knowing that everything is possible, if you can just, you know, protect the guy from getting crushed, that's good motivation. And so I do think that it highlights Donovan Smith's value. And anytime they've had to play without him, nothing against Josh Wells, nothing against Brandon Walton, but they're not Donovan Smith. And that's when you really appreciate him. You know, it's like, you're going to miss me when I'm gone, right? The old song. And I think people miss Donovan Smith right about now.
All right, Jay had tweeted us. He said, I've watched the last three games and the route running has been off. If the receiver catches the ball, he has no separation and falls down, or they're not finding the sticks and the third downs are short. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of underneath throws, and I think that Tom Brady is probably getting rid of the ball as quickly as I've seen him, and I think it's intentional because I think he realizes he's got some inexperienced offensive linemen, and in some cases, like Brandon Walton, guys that have made their first start, and that can be an overwhelming thing for young players. And so I think there's a trust issue there, and that's why I think the ball's coming out. As far as route running and yards after catch and things like that, I would say, well, you know, first of all, look who they're throwing it to. There are some guys on this team that are up in age. Some can't run very well, whether you're talking about Kyle Rudolph, Cameron Brait, you know, isn't the most fleet of guys, some of the guys they look for. And then, of course, last week, you know, we saw the Cole Beasleys and some new players that were put in positions. That's certainly part of it. But separation, I mean, many times, you know, Brady throws you open, whether there's separation or not. The separation can be the length of an arm or a hand, and Brady's going to find you. But the biggest thing is that they're not attacking the ball. They're not attacking defenses vertically. They're not taking those shots that they took with Bruce Arians. And, again, it all comes back to protection. It's inexperience on the offensive line, and injuries. I mean, you can't go into games. You know, look at the Dallas game when they had their full complement of receivers. What did you see? A 48-yard bomb to Julio Jones, which I think he hurt his knee on. But they threw the ball down the field and hit it with Julio Jones in a huge play. You saw the one touchdown, the one-handed catch to Mike Evans down on the goal line. Spectacular play by a player that's, you know, really kind of putting together a Hall of Fame resume, if you will. So, you know, that's sort of what you need on the field if you're going to make big plays like that, splash plays, chunk plays. You need great players. And they just haven't had enough guys on the field long enough and together enough, even in the preseason. I mean, Russell Gage didn't practice very much. And you always hear this word around the box. It's called time, or this series of words, it's called time on task. They need more time with Brady, more time on task in practice, to get the rhythm down, to get all of that down. And so I think when you as we get deeper into the season, if these guys can remain healthy, I think you'll see better execution, more precision, more separation, and they'll be able to scheme up some things and get some guys more open. But, yeah, I agree. Right now it seems like every pass is contested. Everything is underneath. And, again, I think it's a combination of the injuries and, you know, just the inexperience.
John had tweeted us. He says, I wonder why Keyshawn Vaughn is getting zero carries. Watch the Philadelphia playoff game last January when Leonard Fournette couldn't go. He looked like the real deal, had a really good game. With Lenny getting hit so much, I don't get why the Bucs Don't give him part of the load, at least. Thank you.
Well, that's now you, me, and we can include Todd Bowles in that very same sentiment, because he has finally come around, at least verbalized this. It hasn't. Again, it's one of those, you know, I'm from Missouri, show me. He hasn't shown us that what he's saying he's going to do. But what he has been saying, or at least what he said after this game, is, look, we have to get more running backs involved. You know, we have other guys, including Keyshawn Vaughn. And you're right. I mean, I remember when Leonard Fournette hurt his hamstring the final three regular season games of last year. I mean, they were, you know, the Bucs had a very, very big wild card game at home against Philadelphia. And we know how good Philadelphia is because you see how they play now in this division, leading their division, and Jalen Hurts playing very, very well. And it was a tough game. But Leonard Fournette, kind of the idea was he was going to get back by the end of that week. Well, you know what? He didn't. He didn't make it back. And it kind of surprised a lot of coaches that he had missed three of the last regular season games, and the idea was to get him healthy for the playoffs, and then he didn't make it to the playoffs. And so they were going into what could have been their final game of the year against the Eagles, and Keyshawn Vaughn was the dude. I mean, he was the guy. And he did play very, very well. And since then, they've been big, you know, they call him Snacks, but it's his nickname, but they've been big, you know, on Keyshawn Vaughn and just, you know, how they challenged him in the offseason to improve every facet of his game, you know, running, blocking, pass receiving, and they said, and he has done it. Well, what happened when the season began? The guy didn't even get a helmet. I mean, he's inactive, right? And I know that some of that's a function of special teams, et cetera. Look, they thought Rashad White beat him out. They thought that this is our number two running back. That's their evaluation. We know that White was explosive in the preseason. But you know what? When Vaughn played, he played pretty good too. And finally, Todd Bowles said just the other day on Monday that they have got to get more guys involved in the running game like Vaughn and, you know, and others and White. And I think they're going to start to do that. I really do. I think it just has run its course with Leonard Fournette, the amount of carries he's had, the amount of hits he's taken, and just the predictability of, you know, he's going to run out here in the flat in the screen game. He's going to run inside on this, run inside on that, maybe an occasional toss. And I think teams are looking for it. They're keying on him. And they'll key on the next running back too. But, you know, you don't want to run a guy into the ground in September when you hope to have him, you know, in January. So I think the Bucs have to be smart and sort of manage the whole season. I know they want to win every game, but you do have a full roster. You got 53 guys on that team. You should start using them.
All right, Paul had tweeted us. He said, what's the deal with Devin Tompkins not getting a look? He seems to be a very dynamic talent. It's got to be special teams deal. Plus, if White can't get in the game with a limited offense, then will he play any role at all this year? My guess is Leonard Fournette has to get injured for him to play.
Again, it kind of goes back to the last question. I mean, White is their kickoff return guy, so right now all he's doing is playing special teams, and there's got to be more involvement with him. As far as Tompkins go, I mean, I know they loved him. I mean, the guy's got spectacular hands. And, yes, special teams, anytime you're talking about the fifth, sixth, seventh receiver, if you're going to have that many up on Sunday, he has to play some teams. I don't think it's necessarily a strength of Tompkins. But, gosh darn, you know, you go and you take a Cole Beasley sort of, you know, off the street and you plug him right in the game and he catches a big fourth down pass. I think it says a lot about where this team is at and kind of who's in control of it. And where it's at is zero-sum game, Tom Brady's last year, most likely in Tampa, maybe in football. We're not, you know, the old green bananas, we're not buying those. We want experienced players because of the trust factor. Tompkins may become a great player. I think he has some of the best hands I've ever seen, and that's saying something. But he's got to force his way onto the team somehow, and that's going to be difficult with the number of veteran receivers on this roster. Tom Brady is in charge of who he throws to. And, you know, if there's enough guys hurt, yes, you would think that, you know, before the year is over that Tompkins will get his shot. But they still went off the street with a Cole Beasley who had over 80 catches last year. And you trust a guy over a rookie. It's just because of what the stakes are and what they're playing for. But I would love to see, you know, some of the younger players because I think they have some explosive talent. And, you know, they got to develop it, and you do that in practice. You do that on the scout team. He's not even running the Bucs offense right now. He's, you know, simulating other receivers from the opponent and things like that. That's his job. That's his role. But you would like to see him get that opportunity. It just it hasn't happened yet. It's probably going to take some more injuries, unfortunately.
All right, David had emailed us two questions, actually, to rstroud@tampabay.com. So number one, Aaron Rodgers said after the game he saw something on the Jumbotron that tipped him off to what play the Bucs were going to run for the two-point conversions. Do they have any idea exactly what he saw, and will they do anything to avoid this from happening in future games? And two, is it possible that offenses like the Bucs are starting slow because of the lack of preseason work and due to the fact it's easier for defenses to get a faster start?
All right, we'll take one first. It was interesting. It was a very sort of nervous moment in the room on Monday when I asked Bruce Arians about the game day operation, and that, you know, Aaron Rodgers told Tom Rinaldi after the game that, you know, there was something on the Jumbotron that probably shouldn't have been there, and he went and, you know, went to Matt LaFleur and told him, within a, presumably told Joe Barry, and that it helped them on the two-point conversion play. And listen, I don't know and haven't heard specifically what Rodgers thought he saw, but it was apparent that somehow the Jumbotron was showing a shot, a sideline shot of Tom Brady and Byron Leftwich prior to that play. Now, you know, whether they got, I don't know what they would have got a close-up on the play card, I would think not, but you know, whether they can read lips, personnel groupings, I don't know. But there was something that Rodgers said after the game that helped them. Todd Bowles said there was going to be a meeting on Monday, and I very much believe there probably was. I don't know if anyone got fired, but I would say this. If you see a sideline shot prior to a two-point conversion or a major play in the game like that, on the scoreboard, it would be shocking to me. I mean, not to where they're going over plays and trying to select personnel groupings and things like this. You might see some sideline shots, but I would think that if somebody wasn't terminated, and I haven't heard that they were, that there's probably a new Todd Bowles rule or maybe the Aaron Rodgers rule that we don't show the sideline, you know, prior to critical offensive plays, because just the mere idea that that might have happened is really unnerving, right?
Yeah, well, I would imagine every team in the NFL is going through that this week.
Yeah, they're all having that meeting, yeah.
It's like, you know, let's review what we put on the scoreboard and when you're allowed to do what and not, because
right,
you know,
right.
The last thing you want to do is give the other team an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, up to that point, if you're a game day operations guy, like the biggest decision you have to make is, like, do we put the Tampa Bay sign up on the scoreboard to get the fans going, or do we, you know... Like, this is not typically a stressful job, so to speak. You show replays, you do the basic stuff, and then all of a sudden this comes in. You got Aaron Rodgers. I mean, can you imagine the operations guys like, wait, what did he say? We did what? He saw something on the scoreboard that we put up there? Oh, my God. You know, that's a bad Monday for that person, whoever it was.
So now all the scoreboard operators are going to be putting up the opposing team's sideline the whole game, correct?
Absolutely. And getting as tight as you can. I mean, look, if you can glean stuff from those shots, you might want to aim that camera at the opponent's sideline.
That would be fantastic. All right, one more on the Bucs, and we'll get a couple USF questions. Bob had emailed you. He said, offensive woes are because, A, Tom Brady took an 11-day vacation during training camp. B, the preseason's only three games and the starters only get limited reps. C, the offense is working with a new starting right guard, new starting center, new starting left guard, new starting left tackle, new starting tight end, and three new starting receivers. Or D, all of the above, but mainly the changes in personnel.
I would say that it's D. And D kind of folds into the lack of a preseason, right? Because when you have that much change, and remember, you know, they won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady and a bunch of guys that he had a lot to do with adding. And then they ran it back. They brought all 22 starters back, and they got a ton of injuries in the secondary, and things weren't just quite the same. But for the most part, it was the exact same team as the one that won the Super Bowl. Well, this year, they had to do something different, and they couldn't re-sign everybody. And a lot of guys came up in free agency. They kept the ones that they liked. But then you had injuries again occur. And it's a great point when you spell it out like that, when you go, okay, so here we go. So Ryan Jensen, key player. First free agent signed after Tom Brady. In fact, the day that Tom Brady decided to come back and end his retirement, they re-signed Ryan Jensen, who I was convinced was on his way to Cincinnati or someplace else. So he goes out and he gets hurt second day of training camp. So you have a new right guard, or I'm sorry, a new center. And then your right guard is new because it's Shaq Mason, who replaces Alex Kappa, who's in Cincinnati. Your left guard, this wasn't even part of the equation, your left guard, Ali Marpet, he up and retires at age 28, right? You didn't expect him to be gone. And then, you know, you draft a guy in Luke Getteke to replace him. Now you have a left tackle in Donovan Smith that's out on top of it. So now the only guy that was on the offensive line when you won a Super Bowl is Tristan Wirfs. That's the only guy you're playing with right now. Those other guys got to come back. And then you go to the tight end position. Yeah, you don't have Gronkowski, the greatest tight end of all time, in my opinion. First ballot Hall of Fame player, no question about it. Tom's sort of safety valve and all of that. And then last game, three new wide receivers. No wonder they didn't score any points, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only thing constant about this lineup is Brady.
Well, and let's talk about some other changes. Bruce Arians is not the head coach anymore.
Big one.
You're not trying the no risk it, no biscuit philosophy of chucking it down the field as much.
Correct.
You're purposely running the ball a lot more,
mm-hmm.
which shortens the game essentially, and you're not getting those big chunk plays like you do in the passing game when you're chucking it down.
That's right.
So some of it's by design that the offense is going to be
slower. They've slowed it down.
You'd like to see more of those balls caught by receivers, and you'd like to see it be a little better protection for Brady in the pocket so he's got more time to throw it.
Yeah.
But I think there's so many changes, the ones that Bob made, but also the coaching change and the philosophy change is a big part of this too.
And a thing that gets overlooked because everybody's like, wow, the defense, man, they're so good. If we just had an offense. You want to know one of the major reasons why the defense is good? Because of how they're playing offense,
mm-hmm.
right? And you say, well, they're not scoring any points. They're not playing well. I don't know what you mean. How can that help the defense? Well, up until the last game, they didn't turn the ball over,
mm-hmm.
okay? And mostly, they've been running the football, okay? And against Dallas, when they ran it for 127 with Fournette, you know what that did? That chewed up an awful lot of clock, man. Those are minutes and plays that the opposing offense is not on the field. Your defensive players are getting rested. When they come back on, they're like, you know, they're a house of fire. So that's sort of been one of the major reasons that gets overlooked is why this defense has been able to give up 3, 10, and 14. So, you know, that's sort of like the deal. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think it's a combination of those two things.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, we got some USF mailbag questions, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this with Matt Baker on tomorrow's podcast. And just a heads up with Hurricane Ian coming, we've already pre-taped the Matt Baker podcast for Thursday morning, knowing that the storm was going to be hitting our area Wednesday night. You're not always sure about power, et cetera. So that episode's been pre-taped, previewing college football this weekend. But Eric had tweeted us, and he said, how much longer should USF go on with Jeff Scott as its head coach? While he came into a tough situation a couple years ago, it's now year three, and most games the team is out of before halftime.
You know, I struggle because I wouldn't want people calling for my job. I'm not really in that business, but...
Oh, people call for your job lots, though.
Well, that's true. Screw it. let's just jump on the bandwagon then. They do call for my... What am I thinking? I got trolls and trolls for years. There's a whole. Well, I won't say what the fake website is, but it involves part of my name. I think this, and we kind of said this at the beginning of the year, that, and we talked about it with Matt Baker, and I agree with him. But you can listen to that podcast. We don't have to replay it here. it was a difficult. First of all, USF's a for whatever reason, USF has been a difficult program to gain momentum with since Willie Taggart, I would say, you know, Quentin Flowers, that era, certainly Jim Leavitt before that. They've struggled, and a lot has changed about college football, NILs and all this stuff, you know. But you should be able to keep good players at home. I think Scott is a good guy, a great human, probably a pretty good recruiter. But he was a first-time head coach, and he came in during a pandemic, not good. Second year, still not good. But now you've got your guys, and there's really no excuses. I thought they maybe had turned a corner when they played Florida. Then they lay the incredibly bad, bad egg up in Louisville. To me, this is sort of do or die. You know, like, you're playing in conference play now, but not against the top conference teams, right? You're not playing a Houston, you know, a SMU, you know, some of those teams. So you need to handle business. You need to handle your business with East Carolina. And look, the Pirates aren't going to come in here and just, you know, think they can't win. I mean, they're looking at USF going, we got this one, you know? Like, we might get beat in some of these other games, but we got this one. And they're playing a game down at Florida Atlantic. That game has been moved because of the hurricane. But come hell or high water, no pun intended, they've got to find a way to win a football game. I mean, you know, there's no moral victories now. You're in conference play. If you're going to be competitive in your conference, you have to win this game. And that's what this is about, you know. Sure, you can drop one to Florida and have close shaves here and there, but this is conference play. And USF should, and at this point, three years into the program, they should win. And they need to start winning, and they need to start winning right now. And if you can't, then I'm afraid that it's not going to go well for Coach Scott. I don't know if, when, how, buyout, you know, I don't know any of that stuff. And frankly, I don't mind. What the key will be to me is, how does his team respond to him, right? They had a great game against Florida. They were absolutely putrid at Louisville. They know what's at stake. If he can't reach them, if he can't have them come out and execute and play really well and be prepared and play hard for him, then I'm afraid that he's an ineffective coach. I think he's kind of lost his football team. Because, you know, they want to see success too. That's all players want, is put me in a position to succeed. We want to win. Give me a chance to win. And if his coach isn't doing it, they're going to start not believing in him either. And so I think it's a critical, critical game, the most critical that Coach Scott has had to date.
All right, Walker emailed us following up on that. A few weeks ago, you mentioned John Gruden may someday get a coaching job at the college level. If Jeff Scott doesn't work out at USF, do you think Gruden would get any consideration? Would he take the job? I think he still lives in Tampa. Would be an easy commute and possibly a good recruiter for the area. All hypothetical, but fun to think about.
I tell you what, man, I'm a good person. You know, I go to church. I got three sons. All those things he said at the Arkansas quarterback club. I don't know. I would think, okay, that right about now, I do know this. Right about now, John Gruden is really, really, really missing ball, right? He's missing coaching, man. He's always wanted to be part of a team. You know, he was part of ESPN's team, and he wanted to be part of an NFL team again, went to the Raiders. But, you know, you can call it a cancel culture. I can't forgive the things he said. He can't forgive it. He even said it himself. He goes, you know, I know they were shameful. I think he said, they're shameful. And yet we're a forgiving society. I just want to know what work he's done to change his attitude more than anything else. Like, you know, it's one thing to say you're sorry, but then people want to know, well, are you sorry because it cost you your job, or are you sorry because you truly realize you've hurt people, you know? And so I don't know what work he's done on that end. USF, yeah, it's in Tampa. I think coaching any ball right now, he would probably be receptive to. I don't know how he feels. You know, he's had the opportunity to coach college before and said no, because I think he's an NFL coach at heart. I think that's sort of where he feels the best, you know, dealing with grown men for the most part. I don't know how he would do with 18 to 22-year-olds. I don't know. Or in this case, there might be 24-year-olds with the transfer portals. So it's hard to predict that. I don't see USA. I always say this, have the press conference, right? Would it be popular among some Tampa Bay fans? Yes. But then immediately, you know, questions about, you know, Holman Fulmic comments and, you know, just everything, misogyny, like all that stuff ends up having to be answered by the university president, you know, in the opening press conference. And I don't think enough time has passed for that for USF. I don't think USF is looking for that. And John, you know, he's not everyone's cup of tea to begin with. I mean, John's a grinder and he's going to be demanding. And, you know, I don't know who it would have to be. Somebody that had a relationship, I think, with John in some level that would hire him to begin with. And I would think there would have to be a lesser program even than USF, you know, like I think it, I don't know, like there are certain programs in the country, Liberty, you know, that gave Hugh Freeze another chance. Like there's certain programs that are sort of redemptive that way. I don't think USF is that program. I don't think it'll happen, but it's an interesting, I don't know. And I also don't know, like just in general, like would people be excited about that? I don't know. I mean, guy won a Super Bowl here. He's a 500 coach in the NFL.
He's a former Ring of Honor member.
Could you get back in the Ring of Honor in the stadium if USF adds it to the Raymond James?
Well, you're taking out of the Bucks. Could you make the USF Ring of Honor?
Could you make the USF Ring of Honor in their stadium? Yeah. There you go. Maybe be the first guy in it. You never know.
Yeah. I tell you what, man. Go Bulls.
All right. Craig had emailed. He said, should USF look at Scott Frost? Jeff Scott's not doing well, and Scott Frost had great success at UCF.
I don't know. I haven't found it. Of course, it's not working the other way right now with Coach Scott, but I haven't found it where guys working their way down the ladder of success to USF do very well, right? We had Charlie Strong, you know, coach of the University of Texas. Like, typically, those guys are just biding their time until they get the next, you know, Power 5 conference team school. They you know, they've fallen out of favor like Scott Frost, and they're like, okay, let me go here and try to rebuild my brand, and I'm going to take the next job at a Power 5 conference. So I know what you're saying. I mean, Frost was good in this conference, great for USF. I don't know why it didn't. If there was ever, like, I missed that, right? Like, if you would have told me, like, is there ever a better marriage between, you know, coach and school than a Scott Frost going to Nebraska? I mean, I thought that would be a grand slam. I'm stunned that it turned out the way it did. But I don't know for USF. I'd almost rather them take another chance, and I know they did with Jeff Scott. I'd almost really rather take another chance, a little bit like Florida did with a Billy Napier, right? Like, I don't know if you can get that quality of coach maybe that's on his way up.
Well, Florida State with Mike Norvell.
I'd rather get a guy that's on his way up than on his way out. You know, that's just my opinion.
If I'm a school like USF, you're in the, you know, Power 6 or the Group of 5, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I want to be replacing my coach every 3 or 4 years. But it's because they've succeeded and moved up. I want that young, hungry coach. You know, I mean, that's if you're USF, you're UCF, although UCF's now going to the Big 12. I've seen it at Cincinnati for years. You know, I want the young, hungry coach that I have to replace 3 or 4 years from now. But it's because he left the program in a better shape than when he got there.
Yeah.
I'll take that replacement every time.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Cincinnati had a long line of, you know, from Brian Kelly to Mark D'Antonio to Butch Jones went to Tennessee. He didn't succeed
right.
But he did well at Cincinnati. Then they brought in Tommy Tuberville.
Mm-hmm.
Woof.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's what I mean.
You know, and I know some inside there where Tommy wasn't really interested in coaching Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You know, and then they got back to Luke Fickell.
Right.
Who had been an interim coach at Ohio State, but never really the head coach. Took over in May for Jim Tressel when he was fired. But, you know, I want that young, hungry guy. I want the guy that, like I said, 3 or 4 years. If I'm a school that's out of the Power 5, you know, you having success means you're going to lose your coach. More than likely. Because resources, finances, all that stuff. You're not bringing in as much money. You don't have the $1.1 billion contract that the Big Ten Network has with the networks. You know, your conference right. doesn't. So, you know, if you're going to replace Jeff Scott, I want another young, hungry coach that, like I said, you're going to have to replace. I don't necessarily want the guy that is trying to rehab his image or whatever else. Although,
no,
we'll see how Gus Malzahn does at UCF.
Yeah, but I don't either. I just mm-hmm. don't. I'm sorry. It's like he's been to the mountaintop. He just mm-hmm. wants to get back there, and he's going to take as many shortcuts as he can to do it. You know what I mean?
Many, yes. I think there probably are exceptions to those rules.
Maybe.
You know, because it depends on the individual, but, you know.
I don't know, man.
But I agree with you. I'm just saying I can't think of one off the top of my head, but there's probably
Listen,
one or two
there's advantages. There's advantages to guys who have done it before and know what it looks like. There is. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. first-time head coaches don't know. And you talk to Todd Bowles about this in the NFL. He's like, what makes you confident that you'll be better? Well, because I know all the answers to the test. And you can't possibly know what you don't know if you're a first-time coach. And I think that's Scott's problem. Like, typically what they do, and Bruce Arians going back as far as the 80s with Temple, he said he almost killed him when he took his first head coaching job with Temple. He said, I tried to do everything. Mm-hmm. Hell, he would have mowed the grass. You know, like, he was a control freak. He didn't learn to let go and build a staff and trust those guys and teach them how to coach. And, you know, but you love the enthusiasm. You love, you know, but there's something to be said for somebody who has seen the kind of problems that come across your desk that distract you from the game plan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so having said all that, I still don't want a guy who is just looking to make, you know, have some good outcomes and get right back into the Power Five again. Like, if that's his goal, and it should be everybody's goal to improve and you know, prosper, but I don't know. I'm leery of that candidate, you know. Great questions, as always. You can send those to us anytime. You don't have to wait for a mailbag call. Just do that on Twitter at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter at NFLStroud. My email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. We appreciate the feedback. A lot of you asking if we're going to have the podcast throughout the hurricane. We know you have time on your hands. Hopefully you're listening to this. We've managed to pre-tape some of these. We'll have Matt Baker tomorrow, our college football writer. Some big games on tap, including Florida State hosting Wake Forest. Well, he will be. So you want to make sure you're on hand for that. And the Bucks will, of course, know more about their plans as they continue preparations for their game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And check out TampaBay.com and the Tampa Bay Times for the latest updates on when and where that game will be played. Just a reminder, support our sponsor. If you want to save money on an electric bill, May Electric Solar can do that. They've been here for 12 years. They have a 30-year labor and services warranty, $750 worth of surge protection. Start saving today. Call the solar energy experts, May Electric Solar, at 727-819-2862. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.